You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded February 19th, 2025. Well, one of the most disheartening things about the atrocities we've witnessed, visited upon the civilians of Gaza, the West Bank, and southern Lebanon this past nearly year and a half, is that the carnage has been allowed to continue by the so-called international community. More than even that, the liberal democracies of Europe and the Anglo-American Axis countries have profited the slaughter, selling billions of dollars and pounds and euros worth of bombs and bullets, bandages and assorted materiel to scofflaw Israel in aid of its genocide. But it doesn't surprise, or shouldn't do. We've spent the entirety of this century and much of the last idly watching the destruction of millions of lives with hardly a murmur of protest. Judy Reaver is a Montreal journalist and author. Her book, In Praise of Blood, The Crimes of the Rwandan Patriotic Front, is a clear-eyed re-examination of the Rwandan genocide of the last century and subsequent flourishing of its perpetrator, President Paul Kagame. Reaver's recent article at Canadian Dimension, Paul Kagame's Foray in Eastern Congo Leaves Thousands Dead and Sparks Fears of a Broader War, could have been written almost any time in the last 30 years, but what she reveals is happening right now. Judy Reaver in the first half. And the Canadian government is concerned, worried what we citizens see or don't see in the media could damage the nation. It seems in this post-legacy press age, a contagion threatens the health of our body politic and even the survival of our democratic system. Problem is, where once everything we read, heard, or watched was pre-digested and packaged for us by a safe pair, foreign hands now flavor the news, possibly carrying with it two strange and potentially dangerous ideas. But there's a commission for that. Last week, the public inquiry into foreign interference in federal electoral processes and democratic institutions released in 7 volumes its final report on foreign interference. Mark Edge is a Canadian journalist, author, and academic, much awarded. Edge's 8 books span a quarter of a century and include The News We Deserve, The Transformation of Canada's Media Landscape, The Post-Media Effect, How Vulture Capitalism is Wrecking Our News, and his most recent Tomorrow's News, How to Fix Canada's Media. Mark Edge and Fixing Foreign Interference in Canadian Media in the second half. But first, Judy Reaver and Turning a Blind Eye Before, During, and After the Rwandan Genocide. Welcome to the program, Judy.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
Well, it's my great pleasure. Of course, now, Judy, you begin your article in 1996 in Congo and the massacre at the Lemera Hospital. You quote Dr. Denis Mukwege, who says the attack was more than merely a heinous crime against civilians who couldn't be more defenseless. Why do you begin your article there?
Well, Dr. Mukwege is a Nobel Peace Prize winner. He's a highly respected individual. And when he received his prize in Oslo, he started his victory speech talking about Lemera. It was a very important event because it came to symbolize decades of impunity. What happened in Lemera in October 1996 was fighters loyal to Paul Kagame. Kagame is the leader of Rwanda, who has been lauded as a visionary by the West in particular. Fighters loyal to him entered this hospital in 96, launching their war at that time, attempting to overthrow Mobutu. They used guns and bayonets to kill patients in their bed, and some of the patients were shot in the mouth. Patients who tried to escape with IV drips were dangling in their arms. They were chased down and massacred. So this was a gruesome event, and it became to symbolize the beginning of a war, of a savage war that has been waged off and on in neighboring Congo by Rwanda. through the sponsoring of a brutal succession of militia. So it's very painful for the Congolese. And so Dr. Mukwege often reminds people when he speaks to the international community that the victims, the death count from this war that has grinded on is more than 6 million. It can be up to 10 million. There haven't been enough studies, but it's just brutal, and it confounds the Congolese and many of us who care about the nation. And I think the world is gripped right now about what's going on.
Well, it's astounding that Kagame can go to Toronto and sit at a basketball game and be lauded. And as you say, he's treated as some kind of visionary African leader. Dr. Mukwege, you quote him saying he's come to see the hospital massacre that you describe as the beginning of an era of impunity for mass atrocities. And a symbol of the international community's indifference in the face of such crimes. And when I read your article and read your description, the one that you just elucidated, I couldn't help thinking of the hospitals being destroyed in Gaza and how the astounding thing to me about that, I mean, not just in its fact, but is the reaction around the world, blowing up one hospital after another. Seeing patients flee, as you describe, with IV drips still in their arms, and all the rest of the horrors that now hardly garner a second look.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Gaza. I cannot imagine how Palestinians felt when they saw Benjamin Netanyahu applauded in Congress last year when he visited Washington. I really can't imagine, given the level of destruction and actually the genocide that has been meted out, to have the Israeli leader be applauded by representatives of the American people. There's a similar there's a similarity here with Paul Kagame. He has been a geopolitical linchpin for the West. His army and his militias have committed heinous atrocities, which Dr. Mukwege has over the last 30 years drawn attention to. But the issue is that Kagame has never been held accountable. He has never been indicted by the International Criminal Court, the ICC. The subject of my book, In Praise of Blood, takes on this idea that the United States engineered a deal so that his army and senior commanders and he himself would not be prosecuted, were not prosecuted for crimes they committed during the 1994 genocide. So basically, my book is a re-examination of the genocide, but it looks at the crimes that Kagame has gotten away with in Congo and in Rwanda. So this impunity, or the de facto immunity that has been accorded to Paul Kagame, is devastating. And had he been prosecuted in the late in the mid 1990s, pardon me, he probably would never been allowed to invade Congo in the first place and unleash all these rebellions, which have gone on for 30 years. And we can talk about some of the reasons he's done that. It really is devastating. So, I mean, the history here is important.
Well, and at your website, you are not your website, sorry, at your Twitter site, you have pinned an article that you wrote with Benedict Morin in 2020. And the headline, this is for the Mail and Guardian in Africa, the top secret testimonies implicate Rwanda's president in war crimes. So it's not like leaders in the West can feign ignorance. the evidence is in, the reports are in, they were long in, and I think this knowledge was long known in certain quarters, but it is undeniable now as of, and your report spells that out, on the published on the 29th of November. I found it chilling that in that article, when writing about that report, and in it you say, well, these are redacted names that you and Morin released of the victims and the people giving testimony about what happened, a lot of them insiders. But at one point you say, well, we redacted, I'm paraphrasing, but you say we redacted the names, but it's widely believed amongst people giving us evidence that Kagame and his party had the report already unredacted, knowing mm-hmm. all of the people that had testified against them. How is that possible?
Well, it was possible, for one, because we're talking about evidence that Kagame's defectors in his army, his political and military entourage, testimony, these people who fled, who broke with the regime, and then gave to the UN tribunal, okay? And the UN tribunal buried a lot of these crimes because, you know, there was a deal to grant Kagame de facto immunity, which I mentioned before. So that was the idea, was the UN tribunal decided not to prosecute Kagame and his entourage. Now, the testimony that you're referring to that I wrote about was special testimony given by those defectors to something called the Special Investigations Unit of the UN Tribunal. And so, yes, the people who worked at the tribunal knew about these crimes and this testimony, and political insiders knew about this. But the larger public did not. And the reason why... what you just asked me, the reason why Kagame would already know who gave this testimony, who among those soldiers and officers would have gave, is because, number one, they had infiltrated the UN tribunal with people who were favorable to the regime. So they knew what was going on. They had tried to track down and kill, and did manage to kill, some of the people who gave damaging testimony and evidence of Kagame's crimes to the tribunal. So some of the whistleblowers and defectors who have tried to expose Rwandan crimes under Paul Kagame have been tracked down and killed over the years. So to be honest, most Rwandans know who those whistleblowers are and who the defectors are. So, I mean, that is what we were referring to. But that evidence that we wrote about and that you're citing was largely buried by the United Nations to protect this regime in place. And the devastating impact of that is what we're seeing right now, an intense, dangerous escalation in violence in Congo today. So you can't have one without the other.
Well, and that of course is the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, into the 1994 genocide in Rwanda that people may still remember, especially Canadians, with General Romeo Dallaire played a big part of that and wrote a subsequent book, I'm Shaking Hands with the Devil. And also buried by the criminal tribunal was the spark for that genocide, the assassination, the blowing up of the airplane of the president, Habyarimana. That is something that is still it's not widely acknowledged in certain quarters, that it was actually Kagame and his forces that triggered the beginning of that horrible event.
Exactly. The preponderance of evidence that is in the hands of people who have looked at what happened. So people at the United Nations, investigators in France, who had people aboard that plane on April 6, 1994, the plane that was shot down, the plane carrying the Rwandan president at the time, Juvenal Habyarimana, but also Burundi's president. And Habyarimana's closest entourage was aboard that plane. So France had a vested interest in investigating, and initially a judge issued arrest warrants against Kagame's closest military entourage, his senior officials, for triggering the genocide, for shooting down the plane which was the act that triggered the violence in 1994. But France ended up, because it wanted to repair relations with Rwanda, and Kagame France ended up in later years shelving that inquiry. But all the probes and smaller investigations, including one in Spain, have shown that Kagame's commandos were responsible for firing missiles that actually hit the plane and that killed the passengers. And so that's not a secret, but I think we put that into context. It was an act of terrorism that the UN Tribunal, the ICTR, that's the acronym, International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, refused to investigate, even though it had a mandate to do so. So that's a very good example of another of how it basically refused to prosecute Kagame for a serious crime. And so it's the beginning. And so there were other crimes in 1994 which the ICTR had jurisdiction to investigate. It did not. And then, as I mentioned before, the ICC has had jurisdiction, a mandate to prosecute crimes by Kagame in sponsoring militia, which are a series of militia that he has certainly done since 2002, since the inception of the ICC, and it has refused to do so. So there clearly is a political motivation. And many say it has to do with Congo's mineral wealth. But it really, I think the impunity that Dr. Mukwege and Congolese activists point to is just so disheartening. I mean, it is morally gutting.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Judy Reaver. Judy is a Montreal journalist and author. Her book, In Praise of Blood, The Crimes of the Rwandan Patriotic Front, is a clear-eyed re-examination of the Rwanda genocide of the last century and subsequent flourishing of its perpetrator, President Paul Kagame. Well, the president of Burundi, as you mentioned, passed. Well, the current president says, and you quote him saying that if this fighting that's going on today, now in Congo, across the border from Rwanda, carried out by the proxy M23 group continues, he says, quote, "War will arrive in Burundi." What are the prospects of this spreading out of even further than maybe perhaps even Kagame plans it to?
Well, it's very worrying. I think the risk is real and high. I mean, in the last few days, we've seen rumblings and threats from Uganda, north of along the northern border of Congo, threaten to invade and get involved in Bunia across the border, seeking some kind of pretext, which is ridiculous, to invade. And so you need to know that Uganda, under Yoweri Museveni, is a staunch ally of Paul Kagame, and has historically been an organic ally. So already Uganda possibly moving in. You mentioned Burundi. The president said this conflict is seriously at risk of triggering a wider war. I know that President Felix Tshisekedi, that's Congo's president, has been meeting with Angola's army is a very strong army, so one can speculate that Tshisekedi is seeking military support for his beleaguered army. You know, his army lacks discipline, lacks cohesion, and that's part of the reason why this small country called Rwanda, that it's the mouse compared to the Congolese elephant, is so ferocious and managing to make incredible military gains with its puppet M23 militia. It's really astounding if you look geographically, if you look at the map, but Kagame's troops and M23 rebels have seized Goma. That's provincial capital in North Kivu. It's these forces have gone south to South Kivu. They have captured Bukavu. It looks like they might capture within a few days, possibly Uvira. M23 officials are talking about their sites on Kisangani, which is further north. That's a crucial city. So the supply lines, it looks like the M23 and Rwandan-led forces are trying to consolidate mineral-rich areas and the supply lines. This has, I have heard people talking about, this has the potential of turning into a third Congo war. I really hope it doesn't, but people are talking as though it might.
Well, now the UN is involved. There's peacekeepers there. You report that at least 17 of them, mostly South Africans, have been killed recently in this M23 attack. They're standing up and fighting them. What about the Security Council? Are they, what about international condemnation of Kagame and what his proxies are doing right now?
Well, I think, you know, we've seen the European Union and led by Belgium unequivocally condemn Rwanda for taking a leading role in this latest military offensive. So for the first time, we're seeing the singling out of Rwanda as being the apex predator here. They're calling for the M23 and Rwanda to be removed, but there's no concrete action. There's been, to my knowledge, nothing said officially, or no condemnation from Washington, a tepid condemnation, an equivocal one from Canada, no concrete action. You mentioned the Security Council. The Security Council can't get it together. Remember that China and Russia and Washington sit on the Security Council, and China is a big buyer of minerals that are exported from Rwanda. These are laundered minerals. Washington as well, Western countries have benefited from Rwanda being a key transit hub of exported minerals, the key artisanal minerals, tantalum, tungsten, and tin, which are key to powering our modern economy. And as I said, Kagame and Yoweri Museveni are staunch allies of the West. They're geopolitical linchpins. So unless Trump takes a different direction here, which is possible, I don't know what Trump is going to do. The new administration has been very silent about this latest offensive. But in any case, there's been a lot of rhetoric from the international community, but no concrete actions. No arms embargo has been slapped against Rwanda, despite all the documented evidence of thousands of soldiers, Rwandan soldiers in Congo, carrying out, leading this offensive. No sanctions against Kagame and his political entourage, the kind that we saw against Putin after the invasion of Ukraine. There really have been no penalties.
Well, I think it was on your Twitter site that I saw that Kagame had given an interview on CNN recently, and when asked about the Rwandan troops in Congo, he feigned ignorance and said, "Oh, I don't know if there's any troops there or not. You know, you tell me," kind of response. Does that signal that he's worried and that the American mainstream press may be prepared to change direction on providing the umbrella, the media umbrella protecting Kagame all these long years?
Yeah, it was a very strange interview. Very embarrassing for him, because I think a lot of viewers could see through that his nonsense fabrications. But to be honest, I've been at this so long, and the media coverage has been appalling over the last 30 years, perpetuating Rwandan propaganda, perpetuating the myths about Kagame's leadership, about perpetuating the myth of the good guys versus the bad guys during the genocide, perpetuating the myths of why he needs a pretext to invade Congo as he does. But I've seen a turn, and this might be a tipping point. I've seen much more critical coverage in the mainstream media. You know, and I used to work for the mainstream media. I don't anymore, but I think there's been much more education. There's been much more scrutiny over the years. And partly it's because there has been better coverage by people who, you know, have examined these issues. But I think as well, it's Rwandans and the Congolese, especially Rwandans who have fled, have been able to communicate the nature of transnational repression. People being killed and, you know, kidnapped and been made to disappear around the world, not only inside Rwanda, but beyond its borders. That, and I think decades, certainly years of UN documented evidence. So when you mentioned that his interview with CNN, in which he says he doesn't know whether his troops are in Congo or how many troops he might have, I mean, it was just so ridiculous because the UN investigators have relied on drone footage, video recordings, testimony, intelligence, I mean, and satellites to provide that evidence. And so it's no longer in dispute. Rwandan forces control and direct M23 operations. Rwanda is violating, clearly and simply, the territorial integrity of Congo.
Well, Judy, the article is fascinating. It is Paul Kagame's foray in eastern Congo leaves thousands dead and sparks fears of a broader war. You can find that at CanadianDimension.com. And Judy's book, again, is In Praise of Blood, The Crimes of the Rwandan Patriotic Front. Her website is JudyRever.com. That's R-E-V-E-R. And you can find her at Twitter, at Judy Reaver. Thanks a lot, Judy, for coming on and talking a little bit about your work today. Eh?
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
My great pleasure, of course. And please stay tuned. After the break, I'm going to be talking to another Canadian journalist, Mark Edge. And we're going to talk a little bit about the mainstream press in this country, what it has become and why. Thanks again, Judy. Well, I gotta think that we're not alone.
I'm sitting in my house watching all this happen, and I've arrived to a point where I just can't keep my mouth shut anymore.
Guerrilla Radio, you're not alone. Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, the Canadian government is concerned, worried that what we citizens see or don't see in the media could damage the nation. It seems in this post-legacy press age, a contagion threatens the health of our body politic and even the survival of our democratic system. Problem is, where once everything we read, heard, or watched was pre-digested and packaged for us by a safe pair, foreign hands now flavor the news, possibly carrying with it two strange and potentially dangerous ideas. But there's a commission for that. Last week, the public inquiry into foreign interference in federal electoral processes and democratic institutions released in 7 volumes its final report on foreign interference. Mark Edge is a Canadian journalist, author, and academic. Much awarded, Edge's 8 books span a quarter of a century and include The News We Deserve, The Transformation of Canada's Media Landscape, The Post-Media Effect, How Vulture Capitalism is Wrecking Our News, and his most recent, Tomorrow's News, How to Fix Canada's Media. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Thank you.
Well, now, Mark, you